Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Anthony Brooks, and this is On Point. For the past 24 hours, Washington has been consumed by historic drama. After months of discouraging talk of impeachment, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she will launch a formal impeachment inquiry against President Trump.
The actions of the Trump presidency revealed the dishonorable fact of the president's betrayal of his oath of office, betrayal of our national security, and betrayal of the integrity of our elections. Therefore, today, I'm announcing the House of Representatives moving forward with an official impeachment inquiry.
Pelosi and a majority of House Democrats reached the breaking point after the Trump administration blocked a whistleblower complaint from being heard in Congress. It includes allegations that Trump pressured the president of Ukraine to investigate his political rival, Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden, and Biden's son, who was doing business in Ukraine. So where does this inquiry go now? This hour on Point, a tipping point for the Trump administration. A little bit of breaking news. We do know a little bit about the transcript of that call. The president said in it, "I would like you to do us a favor," speaking to Ukrainian President Zelensky on July 25th. We're going to go into those details a lot more as this hour goes forward. So you can join us. Is this formal impeachment investigation long overdue or premature? You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. To begin the hour, I'm joined by Washington by Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan. She's a Democratic lawmaker representing Pennsylvania's 6th District, including the city of Reading and suburban Chester County. She was elected in 2018, the first Democrat to represent Chester County in 166 years. Earlier this week, she co-authored a piece in The Washington Post with 6 other recently elected moderate House Democrats calling for an impeachment inquiry. And Representative Houlihan, thank you for joining us. It's great to have you.
Thank you, and hi, Anthony.
Hello there. Tell me a bit about your conversation with your 6 House colleagues that led you to this decision to call for an impeachment inquiry.
Sure. And first of all, thank you for having me. The 7 of us all have in common that we recently won seats, as you mentioned, in very moderate or purple places. But we also have in common that we've all served at one point or the other in the past. And so for me, I was I'm a veteran of the Air Force. Many of us were Navy. Some of us were CIA. And we formed a very tight bond here in Congress because we take the oath of office that we've taken in the past and that we took as freshmen again very, very seriously. And when these recent allegations regarding the president's purported behavior with Ukraine came to light, it was, you know, beyond the pale, a bridge too far, frankly. This is.
And what was it about that? Why a bridge too far? Because, of course, we went through 2 years of Robert Mueller's investigation. There were all kinds of troubling findings in his report. What happened here that caused you to conclude that this was a bridge too far?
So several things. This is, if true, this is an issue of national security. This is literally money that was properly appropriated by Congress bipartisanly that was headed for Ukraine, one of our allies, to defend against Russia, one of our foes. That was the first concern. The second was the idea that there's corruption, where there's some sort of a, if you do this, then I'll do that kind of a thing, is very, very worrisome. And then the last thing is that this is forward-leaning. This is the 2020 election cycle. This is not what candidate Trump did. This is what President Trump is purported to have done. And that has to do with our 2020 elections, which couldn't be more sacred.
Right. And when you talk about, we're talking about money that was appropriated by Congress, you are talking about concerns or allegations or suggestions that the president held up military aid to Ukraine in what some people suggest might be a quid pro quo. Do me this favor and you'll get this money. Is that your concern?
That is my concern, and in fact, I think it's validated by the facts. Money was, in fact, held up. The president himself, as did his lawyer, recognized the fact that that was a conversation that was had, and so it is very, very troubling.
Yeah. We're just getting some details now about the transcript of that phone call with Ukrainian President Zelensky. There's a quote that I just heard moments ago on NPR where the president says, I would like you to do us a favor, talking about pushing for an investigation into Biden. As you hear this news, and it is very, very fresh, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking that this is something that we obviously need to get to the bottom of. You know, this couldn't be more grave. This is not something that I take any pleasure in moving forward on. There is nothing more serious than thinking about the impeachment of our president. But if these kinds of behaviors are in fact true, these are indeed impeachable offenses.
So is that the point? In other words, do you feel that from what we know so far that the president has committed an impeachable offense, or is there more you need to know?
There certainly is more that I need to know, which is why me and my colleagues pushed forward for an impeachment inquiry or for the release of the transcripts and the release of the whistleblower's report. And I'm very, very heartened to hear that our president appears that he will be doing that.
Now, until yesterday, Speaker Pelosi was not in favor of pursuing impeachment, arguing it would be too divisive and that it would put lawmakers like you, quite frankly, in political peril. Did you speak with her directly? Did you and your fellow six other congressmen speak to her directly? And if so, what did you tell her? And what was her response?
We did speak to her directly, but only after we had submitted the op-ed that you're speaking of. I think it is, I came up in the military. It is a respectful thing to do, to have no surprises for your generals. And so we did mention to her that this was our plan and that we took this very gravely and very seriously.
Yeah. Are you worried how this plays in your district, which, as we mentioned, is a purple district that historically has voted Republican? I mean, this is politically chancy for you.
So I was really called to action in a unique way about two or so years ago to run for Congress. It never was in my plans, but I really felt compelled that at this really important time in our nation's history that I had something to offer and that I could serve in this unique way. So this isn't in any way a political calculation for me. If for whatever reason this ends up being some sort of consequence for me in my reelection, that wasn't why I decided to serve in the first place. This is, I think, the right thing to do. I think it's the moral thing to do. I'm worried that our president has abdicated and abandoned his oath of office, and I want to make sure that I understand what has happened.
Now, in your letter to the Washington Post, you and your six colleagues talked about remaining steadfast in our focus on healthcare, infrastructure, economic policy, and our community's priorities. Given that, are you worried that supporting impeachment takes your party's focus off those issues? Do you feel as though you're taking that risk?
I do. That being said, yesterday, as an example, I spent the day talking about the mushroom industry. That is the number where the nation's capital of the mushroom industry in my community. I talked about women and girls empowerment and entrepreneurism. I met with our chambers of commerce. The business of the people is still going on, but this is also part of the responsibility of Congress, which is oversight. I do take it very, very seriously that my job is to do more than just oversee, but I think that this is something that's really essential that we get to the bottom of.
Right. Final question, Congresswoman. Have you heard from your constituents about your decision?
I have. I've heard largely, vastly positive feedback from my constituency.
You have?
Yes.
Any negative pushback, I guess, concerns?
Some, you know, but I think largely the feedback has been vastly positive, which I'm heartened by because I hope that my community sees that I've very much struggled with this decision, that this is a critical decision on the part of all of us, and that I'm doing my very best to take the facts into consideration and to move as deliberately and slowly as I possibly can on something that's so grave.
All right. Well, that's Democratic Representative Chrissy Houlihan of Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're very grateful.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And with us now from Washington is Lisa Desjardins. She's a correspondent for the PBS NewsHour. And Lisa, welcome back to On Point. Always great to have you.
Good to be here.
So this story is moving at warp speed. I understand that we've got some information about the transcript of the president's call with President Zelensky. What do we know about that at this point?
Right. It is a 5-page document that has been released. It says unclassified now on the top of it. It does look like it is a word-for-word transcript of the phone call. And it was just declassified, as it notes. The phone call happened around 9 a.m. East Coast time, July 25th. And in it, we're certainly learning some new things. First, in what seems to be the second or third exchange the president had with the president of Ukraine, he brought up first an interest item that could be seen as political. He asked the president of Ukraine for a favor, using that word. I want to ask you for a favor. And he asked him to look into a company called CrowdStrike. Some of your listeners might remember that that is a company involved in investigating the hack into the DNC in 2016. And it has been associated, or the server was associated, with Ukraine. As he brings this up, the president says he asks a favor. He would like him to find out what happened with CrowdStrike. And then he says this whole nonsense ended with a very poor performance by a man named Robert Mueller. So he brings up Mueller in his conversation with the Ukrainian president very soon into that conversation. And this all surrounds the Mueller investigation. He is asking the president of Ukraine, kind of in a back way, to look into how part of that investigation was conducted and part of the hacking investigation. After an exchange on that, next the president asks the president of Ukraine about the prosecutor involved in the Hunter Biden case in Ukraine.
This is Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden.
Right? That's right. And This is the item. This is why representatives like Chrissy Houlihan, who you just spoke to, of course, this is the thing that made them shift how they were looking at impeachment over the weekend. And now we know that he certainly did. He made it very clear he wanted the president of Ukraine to call his lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, and also in this transcript it says to work with the attorney general of the United States. It seems he means the attorney general of the United States. He said, I will ask him to call you along with the attorney general. I guess it's possible he meant the attorney general of Ukraine. We have to establish that. But there's a question there to be answered. He goes on to say there's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out. So whatever you can do, and then he says, with the attorney general, I guess meaning the Ukrainian attorney general, would be great. So we're getting more information right now.
Lisa, a lot to dig in this, and we're going to do that for the rest of the hour. Stand by. I'm talking to Lisa Desjardins. We're discussing the launch of a formal impeachment inquiry into President Trump. You can join the conversation. Is the Ukraine phone call, the whistleblower complaint, a tipping point for you? Is Nancy Pelosi right to begin this process? I'm Anthony Brooks. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking about the formal impeachment inquiry into President Trump stemming from the president's dealings with Ukraine. You can join the conversation. Do you think this inquiry is justified at this point? I'm speaking with Lisa Desjardins, PBS NewsHour correspondent, and we're getting some details about the transcript of a July 25th call between President Trump and the president of Ukraine, President Zelensky. The call shows Trump noting how the U.S. has been very, very good to Ukraine twice. And then immediately in the next exchange, he starts asking for investigations. Here's what he said, quote, "Mr. Giuliani is a highly respected man. He was the mayor of New York City, a great mayor, and I would like him to call you. There's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out about that. So whatever you can do with this attorney general would be great. It sounds horrible to me," end quote. Mr. Giuliani, of course, Donald Trump's personal lawyer. Lisa Desjardins, anything? What's your first take? Because the White House, of course, released the transcript. The president was assuring the American people as recently as just the last 48 hours or so that this transcript would show that this was a beautiful phone call, nothing to worry about.
Right. The White House and the president himself have said nothing there. That's what they've told Republicans here at the Capitol as well. I don't like to use a double negative, but I think the best way to look at this phone call in a first read is there's not nothing there.
There's not nothing.
Right. And because there are questions here. He twice brings up asking Ukraine to look into investigations that would help him politically, that have direct ties to his political career, either in the past with Robert Mueller or in the future with our former Vice President Biden. In addition, I think a big headline is the idea that he told the Ukrainian president that Attorney General Barr, and if you read through it, it's clear, he says, "I will have Attorney General Barr call you to help further this investigation involving the Biden family." So the idea of marshaling the top law enforcement officer in the United States with a foreign ally for a very clear investigation of a political opponent, that's very serious. And it's so serious that we have just received a rare statement from the Department of Justice about this. They wrote, this is also still breaking, that the Attorney General essentially has never been asked by the president to contact Ukraine on this or any matter. He has not spoken with the Attorney General about having Ukraine investigate anything related to Vice President Biden or his son. So while the president said that on the phone call, the Attorney General, I think realizing how serious that moment was on the phone call, is instantly telling reporters, "No, that never. The president never spoke to me. I didn't know anything about this. I have no role in this at all." But even the president raising that question on the call is something that I think Democrats will look at very closely and could say could debate and could decide is impeachable. I think that would be on the table for
right.
that discussion.
Lisa, I want to go to some calls. We've got a lot of them backed up, and our listeners really want to get in on this conversation. We're talking about a pending impeachment inquiry against President Trump. We heard Nancy Pelosi make that dramatic announcement last night. This story is rolling along and breaking at warp speed today. Lots to talk about. Let's go to Gary, who's calling from Meriden, Connecticut. Go ahead, Gary. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I've read the Mueller report and found that there were impeachable offenses, but they weren't crystal clear. And because of that, I called my congressman and asked her not to press for impeachment because I thought it would go nowhere in the Senate and only cause harm to the potential election of 2020. Since that time, however, I've changed my mind with the most recent reporting and things the president, Rudy Giuliani, and apparently Secretary of State Pompeo have done, which is a clear violation of the Constitution.
All right. So it sounds like you're in favor of Nancy Pelosi calling for an impeachment inquiry, Gary. Gary, I want to thank you for that call and move on to Carol. She's calling from Southbury, Connecticut. Carol, go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for the call.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I mean, what are we waiting for? Finally, this president believes he is above the law. If this was a Democratic president, it wouldn't even be a question. They would be impeached. We need to hurry and get the Republicans on board to impeach this president. He is a disaster. He believes he's above the law. and he's setting a precedent. We need to stop. We need to get rid of him.
Carol,
now.
I really appreciate that call. Lisa, Carol yes. mentioned there getting the Republicans on board. Let me ask right. you about that. Any progress on that? What's been the Republican response in Washington so far?
Right now, there are sort of two kinds of Republicans, I think, at least on Capitol Hill. One is a Republican who says this is part of Democrats' effort to get rid of the president outside of an election and that these are trumped-up charges that the American people won't buy. That's one kind of Republican. The other kind of Republican is a silent Republican, those who are watching and waiting, many of them finger in the air. They really want to see how this transcript plays out, what they learn from the Director of National Intelligence. I think that those are in the minority. Right now, Republicans generally are backing the president, but I have to tell you, I think over the next few hours, we need to take those temperatures again, because I think I want to see how they read this transcript. We also are getting new information, a lot of news right now from the Justice Department saying that as part of that whistleblower complaint, that sort of the beginning of this whole story, as part of that whistleblower complaint, they were forwarded a possible allegation of a criminal violation by the president, alleging some campaign finance violations as part of this call. I suspect that has to do with him raising the Bidens, which is a campaign issue. The Department of Justice is saying that they reviewed the complaint based on facts and applicable law. They found there was no campaign violation and there was no further action warranted. Now, of course, this gets into one of the a constitutional issue. Here is the Department of Justice, which works for the president, reviewing a complaint about the president, a criminal allegation against the president, and this complaint was not forwarded to Congress. So this raises a lot of serious questions about this process and this phone conversation.
Boy, a lot of serious questions indeed. I want to bring another knowledgeable voice into this conversation. Joining us from Washington is Jonathan Landay. He's the national security correspondent for Reuters. Jonathan, great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
I want to start with you asking you specifically about the whistleblower complaint. The fact that the inspector general thought it was credible enough to pass on to the director of national intelligence. What does this suggest to you?
Well, what it suggests is the following. The inspector general of national intelligence not only found that this complaint was credible and an urgent matter, but, quote, relates to one of the most significant and important of the DNI, that's the director of national intelligence's, responsibilities to the American people. So what he is saying is that under the law that governs the whistleblowers in the intelligence community and the process by which these complaints are forwarded to Congress, he found that it met the legal threshold for transmission to Congress. It's getting a little arcane here, but that threshold requires the complaint to involve a subject that is within the jurisdiction of the Director of National Intelligence. It has to relate to either the budget, to investigations, to intelligence matters, specifically intelligence matters. I've just gone through the transcript that was released of the president's call on July 25th with the president of Ukraine, and there's really nothing on the face of it that relates to an intelligence matter. So we really still don't know at this point what the Inspector General of the intelligence community found was within the jurisdiction of the Director of National Intelligence, an intelligence-related matter that met the legal threshold for transmission of this complaint to Congress. That is still an outstanding question.
Interesting. So I want to talk a little more about this. I mean, we don't know exactly, as you suggested, what the complaint is because it's not been made public. It hasn't been released to Congress. But now we understand the administration is trying to make plans to release at least a redacted version within days. What do you know about that?
Well, that's what we know. We know that the House Intelligence Committee has demanded that this whistleblower complaint be turned over to it by tomorrow. The chairman of that committee, Adam Schiff, has raised the specter of going to court or at least first issuing a subpoena for this whistleblower complaint. If it's not turned over, we don't know how he's going to react to the release of a redacted version. I would think that the committee itself would get the unredacted version. Excuse me. We also know that the whistleblower himself or herself has let it be known through their attorney that they wish to speak to the House Intelligence Committee, as well as, I believe, the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is now looking at this and opening its own investigation into this complaint.
Right. Okay. Lisa, I want to come back to you and ask about Nancy Pelosi's intentions about how this impeachment inquiry will be set up. Because as we know, there are already a number of investigations going on in the House. What is actually different from a substantive perspective now that she has announced a formal inquiry when there are already six inquiries going on?
That's a very perceptive question as to what's happening. I think that the difference is primarily political, to be honest. The House Judiciary Committee over a month ago filed paperwork in court saying it had launched a formal impeachment investigation. And at that time, Jerry Nadler, the Judiciary Chairman, said, you know, it doesn't matter if you call this an inquiry or an investigation. We are here. We are doing impeachment. He said that over a month ago. Yesterday, technically, a change is that Speaker Pelosi has now moved all of the committees investigating the president in line in terms of they are all under the umbrella of an impeachment inquiry or an impeachment investigation together. She's asked all of those committees to come up with their best cases in terms of impeachment and to bring those to the Judiciary Committee to decide what, if anything, to move forward on articles of impeachment with. So that's the technical difference. All of the committees now are under this impeachment umbrella. But really what's happened here, the real news, what felt historic to Democrats yesterday is that Pelosi is on board now the impeachment proceedings. And that means the entire House Democratic Caucus is moving toward impeachment, and they're moving quickly. One of the members I spoke with yesterday about the timeline, which is not decided yet, said it will not be months and months. So to me, that means most likely before the end of the year, and they're moving quickly.
Let's go back to our phones. Shanna is calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Go ahead, Shanna. You're on the air. Great to have you.
Thank you. I've just been a lifelong Republican, but I could not vote for this man. I think it's disgraceful, and I'm totally for the impeachment proceedings. I think he's broken the law already, and it's been proven, and this just puts it a little over the top.
All right, Chan, I appreciate that call. Let me take another one from Andover, Massachusetts. Stephen is calling. Stephen, it's good to have you. Go ahead.
Hi. So my question is, in regards to this, is it's being brought to light, it seems, because of something that Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son Hunter did in his business dealings in the Ukraine. And Biden himself, Joe, on a video, brags about the fact that he got a prosecutor fired that was investigating the company that Hunter's or Joe Biden's son was on the board of directors. They were investigating it for criminal activity, and in some circles, they say they were actually investigating it because they were trying to dig up lies about Paul Manafort and President-elect Trump at the time. And why is that not important?
Stephen, it's a good point. Let me take that to Jonathan Landay. Jonathan, it sounds like Stephen is suggesting that maybe Democrats are playing right into Trump's hands here. I mean, what respond to our caller and his question.
Sure. This is not a case that has just suddenly emerged with the whistleblower complaint. This has been around for a long time. Joe Biden did, in fact, I believe in 2016 or a little later, admit that, yes, he had threatened to withhold $1 billion in loan guarantees to Ukraine. Unless they got rid of a prosecutor by the name of Shokin, Viktor Shokin. But it should be pointed out, and this is not pointed out by either by the president or any of his allies, that it wasn't that Joe Biden's demand for the firing of this prosecutor was in fact a demand of the entire U.S. government. It was a demand of the 28-nation European Union. It was a demand of international financial institutions that were supporting Ukraine at that time. And don't forget, one thing we need to mention is that Ukraine at that time was battling an insurrection in the east of the country by separatists backed by Russia. And let me just read a quote from then International Monetary Fund chief Christine Lagarde, who said, "It's hard to see how the IMF-supported program can continue unless the prosecutor moved forward with prosecutions that his that the country's international backers said he was not doing, that they said he was not, he was dragging his feet on investigating very serious corruption allegations against the former president of Ukraine, a guy by the name of Yanukovych, and people who worked for them, for him, who were ousted in February 2014 in a popular uprising against Yanukovych. And this has been the subject of many inquiries. There has been nothing substantial found to warrant any kind of allegations that of corruption on the part of Hunter Biden or Joe Biden. Certainly ethics experts have had serious problems with the fact that Hunter Biden, by going to work for this Ukrainian gas company, he was a member of the board, created a serious conflict of interest for his father,
right,
who was handling Ukraine at the time. But there's never been a suggestion that there was any kind of corruption involved on Joe Biden's part, because what he was calling for was the position of the U.S. government, international organizations, and the European Union.
Jonathan, hold that thought. We're going to come back and continue the conversation. Lisa Desjardins, stick with us as well. We're talking about House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's stunning decision and announcement that she will launch a formal impeachment inquiry. We'll be right back. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Shinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking about the formal impeachment inquiry into President Trump stemming from his dealing with Ukraine. Let's hear some tape on this story. Campaigning in Delaware yesterday, former Vice President Joe Biden, who's also a candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination, says it's time for Congress to, quote, fully investigate the conduct of President Trump.
The president should stop stonewalling this investigation and all the other investigations into his alleged wrongdoing. Using its full constitutional authority, Congress, in my view, should demand the information it has a legal right to receive. If the Congress does not, if the president does not comply with such a request from the Congress, if he continues to obstruct Congress and flout the law, Donald Trump will leave Congress, in my view, no choice but to initiate impeachment.
And that's exactly what's happening. And here's House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, a California Republican, speaking to the press after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's announcement yesterday that she would be launching a formal impeachment process.
This election is over. I realize 2016 did not turn out the way Speaker Pelosi wanted it to happen. But she cannot change the laws of this Congress. She cannot unilaterally decide we're in an impeachment inquiry.
With me is Lisa Desjardins, correspondent for PBS NewsHour, and Jonathan Landay, national security correspondent for Reuters. Lisa, we just heard Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy there saying that Nancy Pelosi can't unilaterally start an impeachment process. What's he referring to? I mean, the Democrats are in the majority. Is he right about that?
Right. This is a technical question that we're going to hear a lot about, especially from Republicans. The issue is that in the past, the full House, like with Watergate being a prime example, and the Clinton investigation as well, that the full House voted to launch an impeachment inquiry.
I see.
And in this case, the full House is not voting. That Pelosi is essentially saying she and House Democratic leadership have the inherent power to declare an impeachment inquiry. Now, it might sound like that's semantics because clearly they're moving forward on impeachment. They're
right.
Looking into impeachment. What does it matter if it's a formal impeachment inquiry? It matters because a formal impeachment inquiry gives House Democrats more power in courts. They are tapping into a constitutionally protected power, and they can argue to courts that they should have more access to witnesses, to material, including grand jury material, which was available in Watergate specifically because it was an impeachment inquiry.
Let's go to Victor. He's calling from Galesburg, Illinois. Go ahead, Victor. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah, I'm calling from Galesburg, and I'm just wondering out there, everybody's talking about the president, when Congress, especially the House, is going to do their job and legislate. And I'd also like to ask everybody out there, when President Obama said he could be more flexible on the phone or on a hot mic, how that flew, because what I want to know, if we have whistleblowers, the guys that can listen in on the president's phone call, our country's in bad shape, man. We're in deep trouble. That's what I'll tell them out there.
Well, Victor, thanks for the call. Jonathan, I want to bring you on this because, I think the way this process works, I mean, you've got our caller talking about someone listening in on the president's calls. What do we know about exactly how this whistleblower got hold of this information about the president's phone call?
We really don't. That's one of the questions. The fact is that since this whistleblower went to the Inspector General of the intelligence community, it seems quite obvious that this whistleblower is, in fact, a U.S. intelligence officer. We also know that U.S. intelligence officers serve as detailees on the National Security Council, which handles foreign and national security issues for the president. It coordinates policy on those issues. And we also know that when the president has phone calls with foreign leaders, there are what is known as note takers who listen in on the phone calls and take almost verbatim notes, we are told, of these phone calls. I did a story yesterday in which we quoted former U.S. officials, including people who have worked for this administration, who say that those calls are not recorded, that these calls, and in fact, I think if you look at the declassified transcript of the president's call that was just released with the president of Ukraine, it does say that it's based on notes taken by note takers who listen in on the calls and not a recording. Why this is done? The supposition appears to be, remember what happened with Richard Nixon and his tapes. Those figured very prominently in his downfall once they were obtained by the committee, congressional committee that investigated him. But we also know that, at least we were told as part of our reporting yesterday, that there are intelligence officers who do listen in on these phone calls and are part of the note-taking setup at the White House. So the idea that people listen in on the president's call and that's outrageous is not outrageous. In fact, that is indeed the process.
That's the way the process works. Got it. Let's take another call. Jackie is calling from Wellsboro, Pennsylvania. Jackie, good to have you. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a quick question regarding House procedure. Can the question of obstruction of justice of the Mueller investigation be included in the articles of impeachment, or would the inquiry be strictly limited to concerns about the whistleblower complaint?
It's a great question. I want to put that to you, Lisa Desjardins, because I was wondering the same thing, and I gather that this is something that House Democrats are going to have to think about pretty carefully. Just how wide open is this inquiry going to be?
That's right. I think the short answer is yes. Yes, obstruction from the Mueller report can be included. I think we would expect it to be included if they forward articles of impeachment. And other things could be included as well, possible campaign finance violations involving the payments to Stormy Daniels in the run-up to the campaign. Everything that these committees are looking into regarding the president can be included in articles of impeachment. Each one would be a separate article, but the trick right now for Democrats is they have to get that evidence together. They have to figure out if they can make the case and where they can make the case. In many of these investigations, the White House has claimed privilege and has found other ways not to forward documents or make witnesses available, and I'm sure that they will continue to do that. The Democrats will have to figure out where do they have enough evidence to move forward on articles. I also think there will be discussion and likely an article of impeachment on how the president is handling this investigation itself. They will say that the White House and maybe Corey Lewandowski in his testimony last week have obstructed congressional justice as they try to look into these issues. That was one of the articles of impeachment during Watergate. And I think that the president's actions today, and if he does not allow the complaint from the whistleblower to be released, that could be incorporated into an article of impeachment.
It's really interesting. A little earlier in the hour, Lisa, we were talking about those six committees. And just to remind listeners of some of the investigations that are going on, the Financial Services Committee is investigating, for instance, probing Trump's real estate dealings. The Ways and Means Committee is looking into Trump's tax returns. The Oversight and Reform Committee is investigating whether Trump is using the presidency for self-enrichment. So lots of investigations going on, which raises the question of just how wide this impeachment proceeding will be. Let's go to Naris, who's calling from Rutland, Vermont. You're on the air, Naris. Good to have you.
Thank you very much, Lisa, Anthony. A very quick question, and that is, we are talking about a transcript of a telephone call that was released by the White House. Do we have any reason to believe that it is a fair and complete transcript? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Jonathan, how would you answer that question from NARS? I'm not sure how to answer it. I mean, this is what the process is all about, right? It's going to take some time to determine that, isn't it?
That's correct. In fact, as I said earlier, this transcript is the product of notes that were taken. We're told that the notes are pretty much transcript, verbatim, or pretty much verbatim. But again, these are notes. Now, I did speak to a former senior U.S. official who served in the Obama administration, who was in charge of overseeing notes that were taken of conversations between the Secretary of Defense and his foreign counterparts. And this former official told me that typically note takers will not include in the notes issues that might be controversial and that could come back and bite the person that they work for. In this case, her example was the Secretary of Defense. Having read this transcript very closely, it doesn't appear as if that has happened here. But we don't know. And I have to say, that I have been told there is a history of transcripts not fully reflecting exactly what the conversations entailed.
So let me read a quote that we're getting as information about what is actually in this transcript is coming in. So at one point, President Trump is talking to President Zelensky about Robert Mueller, the special counsel, and he says, quote, as you saw yesterday, the whole nonsense ended with a very poor performance by a man named Robert Mueller, an incompetent performance. But they say a lot of it started with Ukraine. He goes on, whatever you can do, it's very important that you do it if that's possible, end quote. But Jonathan, let me just stick with the last caller's question, this sort of idea, is it doctored? I mean, what's the guarantee? What kind of safeguards are there from a transcript like this being doctored? In other words, how can Democrats be sure that they're seeing the whole thing?
Well, they could very well subpoena the note taker. Let's not forget that there was an incident where President Trump did not take a note taker into a meeting he held with the president of Russia, Vladimir Putin. The Democrats have been demanding he did not circulate the notes that were taken. The Democrats have been demanding that they be able to speak to the note taker and get copies of those notes. I don't believe that those have been produced. And so in this case, if they feel like they need to do it, I think the Democrats pursuing the impeachment inquiry could demand to talk to the people who took the notes of this conversation to make sure that, in fact, and other people who listened in on the conversation, because it's just not the note takers who listen in. I remember a photograph that was taken in the Oval Office of President Trump's very first conversation on the phone with Vladimir Putin, and all of his top aides were in there listening in as well. And so it's more than just the note takers who listen in. Mm-hmm. And if the Democrats felt that they needed to do this, I'm sure that they could demand interviews with other people who listened into this particular conversation. And if those people refused, or the White House refused to let them testify, you could see subpoenas.
I got it. I want to get one more call into this conversation. Floyd is calling from Ottumwa, Iowa. Floyd, you're on the air. Thanks for the call.
Hi. You know, let's do this right quick. Instead of this hem-hawing and such, let's just bring this to a general resolution on the floor of the entire House and vote up or down. Impeachment or no impeachment. Let's get on with it. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Floyd, with a quick thought there. Lisa Desjardins, it brings up the point, though, that, does this backfire in some way? In other words, if impeachment drags out and pulls the Democratic Party away from all those issues that polls tell us voters want them to focus on in an election year, what of that?
Well, I think Democrats did make a tremendous political gamble yesterday in deciding we are moving forward with impeachment proceedings before they saw the transcript of this call or the memorandum in these notes. I think today and tomorrow we'll bear out the effect that the substance of this call, as far as we know it, has on the American population. Certainly we're seeing very striking reactions out of Congress right now. The idea that the Attorney General's name was invoked in this call, the idea that there was an allegation, at least, of a campaign finance violation by the president while he talked to a foreign leader, that certainly Democrats are raising very quickly. But what does that mean to the American public? I don't know. And I think the next 2 days will determine that in an important way.
The next 2 minutes, the next 2 hours, the next 2 days, this story is moving really, really quickly. Jonathan Landau, I want to get a final thought from you as we look toward the next couple of hours or the next couple of days. What are you most interested in finding out?
I want to know what it was that the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community felt was an issue, an issue that is covered under the DNI's, the Director of National Intelligence's jurisdiction, and i.e., it's an issue that relates to an intelligence matter. That doesn't come across that really obviously in this transcript. Now, let me quickly say that the position of the Director of National Intelligence, after consulting with the White House General Counsel and particularly the Office of Legal Counsel at the Department of Justice, is that no, this did not meet the legal threshold. It does not meet an urgent concern, and it does not rise. It does not cover an issue that is the responsibility of the Director of National Intelligence. That is what they hold. But the fact is that under the law that governs all of this, and this is the point that the Democrats are making on the House Intelligence Committee, it does not provide for any kind of role for the DNI seeking legal opinions from the White House, legal advice from the White House, legal advice from the Department of Justice. What the law says is that the Director of National Intelligence, that
Jonathan Lende, we're running out of time, against the wall.
Should be sent to Congress.
Got it.
Yeah,
it's got to go to Congress. Jonathan Lende, national security correspondent for Reuters. Lisa Desjardins, correspondent for PBS NewsHour. Thank you both for so much valuable insight today. I'm very grateful. Listeners, you can get the On Point podcast at onpointradio.org. We're going to have a lot more on this as the day progresses. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can Profit Motive Save the Planet is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment. How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.